I hope you enjoyed this music video to take us into our message today. Well, if it hasn't become obvious at this point, our service today has an awful lot to do with James Bond. And over the next couple of months, we're going to sprinkle in a talk or two or a message or two that are based on titles of James Bond movie just for fun. But actually, if the truth be known, my real motivation was just to allow me to do my Sean Connery imitation. Mike's the name. Reverend Mike. Well, I don't know what your reaction to that is, but I will tell you that throughout the years, a lot of people have drawn just incredible comparisons between Sean Connery and me. I know you find that hard to believe, but, well, for example, Sean Connery was right-handed. I am right-handed. Sean Connery was tall, dark, handsome, with a lovely head of hair, and I am right-handed. 007 was licensed to kill, and I have a driver's license. As I said, the comparisons just roll on and on. But today I'm going to start my talk by going back into my file drawer where I have my old joke stored and tell a story that I likely shared with you maybe 7 years ago when I was at Fox Valley for the first time. And it's all about this snake that had very, very poor eyesight. He couldn't crawl 10 feet without bumping into something, and it was really getting him down. So a friend of his said, "Why don't you go see an eye doctor? Maybe he can help." So the snake went to see an eye doctor. The doctor gave him an exam and fitted him with a pair of glasses. And then a couple of weeks later, the snake returned to the doctor's office. And the eye doctor said, "Hey, how's it going?" And the snake answered, "Not too well. To tell you the truth, I'm really depressed." And the doctor says, "Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Aren't the glasses working out for you?" And the snake answers, "No, doc, the glasses are fine. Actually, that's the problem. Because I came to realize that for the last couple of years, I've been sleeping with a garden hose." Our message today is for your eyes only. And so that silly joke definitely is right on topic. Our vision, our eyesight, is truly one of the more significant gifts of life that is so easily taken for granted. We open our eyes in the morning, and even if we have to reach for our glasses, as our eyes open, the world around us just comes to life and opens. And even if we need eyewear to read, we slip on our reading glasses, and we're really good to go. And perhaps like so many other things, we often do not gain appreciation for our ability to see until there's the possibility of losing it. I'm embarrassed to share with you a very personal story. Several years ago, after a routine eye exam at a big box store, because I wanted to get a pair of sunglasses in, I needed to have the exam. I didn't have a prescription with me. But after the exam, the optometrist told me that I might be in the early stages of macular degeneration, and he urged me to go to an ophthalmologist. I was so overwhelmed by this that it paralyzed me. I didn't go to an ophthalmologist, and I didn't tell anybody, and I mean anybody, about it either. And this is something that went on for months. I was afraid that telling anybody would only make it more real. Well, finally, I did tell my internist, who was absolutely great. She responded using very eloquent language, in which she basically told me that I was an idiot. Not just because there were treatments available to deal with macular, but why in the world would I want to live my life under this terrible cloud of uncertainty? Long story short, 3 days later, I went and found out that I didn't even have it. Our gift of vision is so much a part of our everyday lives that much of our vocabulary and many of our expressions come from it. Last week, our topic was, "I never saw it coming." Instead of saying, "I understand," we often say, "I see." When we don't want to acknowledge something, say, for example, the starving children in the world, we turn a blind eye to it. When we don't agree, we don't see eye to eye. And when we take a vote, we say, "All in favor, say aye." Really sorry about that. I just wanted to see if you were paying attention. But there is a mystical and metaphysical side to what we're talking about. Throughout the scriptures, there are stories of eyesight and vision and blindness. And it's used by the writers to illustrate and to manifest relationships, sometimes good, sometimes bad, that individuals or that a people have with God, and how your relationship with God determines just how you see the world. In the Hebrew scriptures, the story of Samson is a great example. Samson's gifted by God with incredible strength. But Samson, even realizing that he is being duped by Delilah, loses sight of his gift and his relationship with God and gives his gift, his power, away. And as a consequence, he loses his gift of sight. And he becomes blind. The quick logical way to look at this is simply that God punishes Samson for disobeying him by blinding him. But there's a more subtle, more profound way to look at this. That is, it was Samson who chose to stop seeing his true gift, which was this incredible loving relationship, this blessed relationship that he had with the Lord, and to who and what he truly was. And this was symbolized then by his blindness. Showing kind of the flip side of this is the book of Ezekiel. The prophet Ezekiel tells of six visions that he has for the Jews while they are in exile at Babylon. The Jews are held captive, and they are an oppressed people suffering all of the physical and mental pain and the humiliation that goes along with that kind of a life condition. The metaphysical meaning for us in a story is to understand, first of that, all of us are to some extent are held in exile and made captive at times by nothing less than our own thoughts and our own fears. But just like in Ezekiel's visions, we never are abandoned. We're never alone. We are always loved, and God always is about the business of liberating us, freeing us, and bringing us home. We just have to see it, regardless of what may be going on around us or within our own heads. One of my favorite scripture stories about blindness appears in the Acts of the Apostles. In this story, Saul was on a mission to seek out, torture, and kill, martyr everyone that he could that was a follower of the way, which what the Christian movement was referred to back then. And according to the story, he ends up getting knocked on his rear and hears a voice that asks, "Saul, why are you persecuting me?" And when he gets up, he opens his eyes, but he can't see. He is blind. Metaphysically, he had to see that he could not see, or that he was blind to the reality of God in the world. He then was led by hand to Damascus, where he would remain blind for 3 days until he was cured. And that 3 days is not coincidental. It corresponds with the time Jesus spent in the tomb before being resurrected. And so there's a symbolism of blindness or darkness, or equating blindness to death. Sometimes before we can see, we have to understand, we have to acknowledge that we've been blind to something. Unless we can do that, we will just continue to live and act in the darkness. Or to put it more correctly, we choose to live in the darkness. It really is a crazy notion when you think about it on a physical level, the idea of choosing to be blind seems so ridiculously absurd that we can hardly imagine it. Yet on an emotional, psychological, political, and yes, a spiritual level, we buy into it all of the time. Sorting out what is real can be so difficult. Even as we've learned on the political scene, even the boldest, most obvious lie can become your belief if it's repeated often enough and hard enough. And of course, the same is true of truths, which is why praying affirmations is just so important and so powerful. Well, my references this morning aren't going to just stay focused on the political realm. Our talk title today is For Your Eyes Only, and there really are two significant parts to that title. The first part is that you have to come to realize, to know, to understand who and what you are in the eyes of God. And this is something that really preaches rather well. On a Sunday morning, it's relatively easy to hear and accept that you are incredibly loved by God. It's easy to hear that you are made in the image and likeness of God, and that you are precious beyond your wildest hope and dream. And while all of this is true, really coming to it fully involves committing yourself to a labor of exactly how does this play out for you in a very unique way, particularized for you in your everyday life, or for your eyes only. Everything and anything that's not in alignment with growing that awareness of who and what you are in the eyes of God, everything that tells you to the contrary is a lie, and if you accept it, it becomes a blind spot. If you want to house it in a more recent, unfortunate phrase, it's fake news. And being about growing this awareness, it's a lot of work. It starts with affirming your light. From there, it involves fending off every message, every commercial, every snide remark, every act of bullying that bombards you throughout your entire life. Many of us are outraged by the lies thrown around in the political arena. We should be no less enraged when we are told that we are not worthwhile, or when we are made fun of or ridiculed, or when people around us are just plain hurtful. All of these types of actions are painful in so many ways, but they are not true. They're just lies. They only serve to keep you from seeing how incredibly awesome that you are. Growing up, we all heard the saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, that may be a useful deflection, but the truth be told, words do hurt, and lies can blind us. But let's be realistic. These signals that are sent to us, the words and actions, actually take us to a place of exile and hold us captive. The consciousness in the world that changed us has been around for an awfully long time. And just like this stupid virus that plagues us right now, it's not likely to go away quietly. But you know what? It's okay. We really, really do not need to get all caught up in the magnitude of it all. Imagine the political and social upheaval that must have occurred that allowed the Jewish nation to escape, to emerge from their exile and their captivity. On the world stage at that time, the Babylonians were powerful. They were a true world power, a major military power. Imagine the message that for decades must have been pounded into the Jews while they were in captivity in Babylon. You are ours. We own you. You are nothing. You are slaves. Imagine the messages that were sent to slaves in our own country. In fact, you don't have to imagine. If you just look around, variations of those messages are still being sent today. Imagine the message that again was sent to the Jews in Nazi Germany. The lie that was told and spread that it was the Jews that were responsible for Germany losing the First World War. Imagine the message that's sent to people that are sick but can't get health insurance because of a pre-existing condition. Sorry, but money's money. And we're going to stick to that claim that money is more important than your life or your healing. And yes, in the divine order of things, maybe that's a lie, but can you blame us for telling it? But according to Ezekiel's vision, there was only one standpoint, one perspective that the Jews needed, only one that was necessary, only one that mattered, as one of Ezekiel's visions showed, and I encourage you to go and read it. The Lord never turned away. All the Jews had to do was return to that knowing. All they had to do was to allow themselves to be seen as God saw them. Chosen people, beloved children of God. Earlier on, I mentioned that first part of For Your Eyes Only was to recognize who and what you are in the eyes of God. And the second part of For Your Eyes Only really flows from that. It's to understand, to come to grips with what God is in your eyes. How often in your life, in your daily routine, and especially when things start to go wrong, do you allow the thought to come into your head, you know what, it is all God? You might say, well, yeah, been there, done that. That didn't work out, didn't change a thing. And if that's the experience you had, I'm really, really sorry. And I don't know. But maybe you said that you saw God in everything. But really, on some level, maybe you were blind to that reality. God knows that the world is really good at teaching us the art of deceiving ourselves. For your eyes only, seeing God only sometimes just doesn't play out. God is not a reference book at the library that you check out occasionally to get an answer. God is not a Wikipedia lookup. And God's not a Google search. And maybe these metaphors seem a bit silly to you, but if you are checking in with God on occasion, and only on occasion, and not about the business of aligning yourself with God like always, that at least in part, you are choosing spiritual blindness. And how silly is that? You are the Word of God in the world today. If you want to do a search or research on God and how God fits in with what is happening in your world, I suggest prayer.com. Our way shower, Jesus, tells us to be all in, to have that single eye focus that everything comes from the Father and everything is the Father. And you could only do this if, when you look in the mirror, you allow yourself you dare to see yourself as God sees you, for your eyes only. I opened the talk with that song by Sheena Easton. And Sheena Easton was singing to 007 and not to God. But boy, if you listen to the words, they really apply to an understanding of how things come into place when you envision those words being sung to spirit, to that loving energy that always holds us and envelops us. We don't get out of this world without being broken at some point. Nobody escapes, nobody gets away without some worry, some pain, some humiliation. We all need healing, but the best, the only way to be healed is to become a healer. If we truly want to be made whole, we need to look at one another with the eyes of God. As slow and painstaking as it may be, we need to hold the sacredness of every life, regardless of how it puts things on hold or sets aside that world to-do list that we all have. If the word namaste could only come to mind whenever we look into someone else's eyes, we at long last would bring an end to blindness throughout this world. Early in this talk, I shared with you a real embarrassment of being scared that I had macular degeneration and how I let that paralyze me. But if I might coin a phrase, it wasn't a fear of macular degeneration that chained me. It was mystical degeneration or a blindness toward that one source, one power active in my life. It was a blindness to how much I'm loved by spirit, by God, the Father, whatever reference you want to use. That is really what caused me the pain during that time. On two occasions, when Jesus was approached by people who were blind, Jesus asked them, "What do you want?" In those stories, they answered, "We want to see." And they were healed. I close by asking you the same question. What do you want? But don't answer me. Take the question to prayer and meditation and affirm that the answer that you get is for your eyes only. And so let's do that right now.